This is Can I Laugh on Your Shoulder? Hey, welcome to Can I Laugh on Your Shoulder? I'm Molly Stillman, and this is a podcast where each week I get to sit down with a different guest and have raw, funny, often brutally honest conversations about the things that matter most. Faith, business, life, and everything in between, where we each learn how to be good stewards of the things we've been entrusted with, even our stories, and how we can use those things to serve others and leave our families, our friendships, and our communities a little better than we found them. I want to create a space where people are unafraid to be themselves and unafraid to ask the questions the rest of us are thinking. My goal is to make you laugh, cry, and laugh till you cry. My guest this week is the incredible Maddie Jackson Smith. She's an author, podcaster, and speaker, and just 3 weeks shy of their first wedding anniversary, Maddie lost her 28-year-old husband suddenly to a traumatic brain injury. Her first book, Lemons on Friday, Trusting God Through My Greatest Heartbreak, chronicles her first 3 years of grieving her husband and her marriage. In addition to writing and her work in the world of grief, Maddie hosts her own podcast, the In Joy Life Podcast, which encourages listeners to own their agency to choose joy in any season or circumstance. I absolutely love Maddie. She is incredible. She is funny. I had the honor of being on her podcast actually a few weeks back. And she's one of those people that the moment that I met her, I knew that we were destined to be friends. She's funny, she's wise, but she also speaks about joy from a place of experience and of, you know, deep pain. You are going to love her. You should absolutely check out her book, Lemons on Friday. You should listen to her podcast, Enjoy Life. And also, just kind of teasing it, but she has a second book coming out this fall, so you can keep an eye out for that. But without further ado, I want to get right into my conversation with Maddie Jackson Smith. So this is very exciting and fun because Maddie and I, when this is airing, we will have met like a few months ago. But when we're recording, we basically met for the first time like a week ago. And you were just immediately the kind of person who I was like, if you lived in relative vicinity to me, I have a feeling that we would be really good friends.
100%. I think, in fact, I rattled off all of the arbitrary ways that we are the same.
Yeah. I really think that we were maybe separated at birth. We're kindred spirits. And so immediately I was like, all right, well, we got to have you on the pod. So I'm so excited. So Maddie, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Oh, Molly, thank you. I'm so excited. I am now a 7-day plus subscriber and listener to the pod. So it is a gift to this quickly also be a guest.
So fun. Okay. So I actually wanted to kind of copy you because you asked me a really fun question at the start of our podcast that is one of my favorite ways to get to know somebody. And so I'm going to ask you the question you asked me. And this is something I've never done before because I always start my show the exact same way, which we will get to that. But you asked me a question of like, if you had like a walkout song, if you're a baseball player, you have a walkout song, what would your walkout song be? Now I need to know what yours is, Maddie.
Now I'm annoyed at myself because I should have remembered that you love this and prepared myself. I intentionally don't prepare my guests because I'm a cruel person. But
yeah,
can I give you two answers? Because I have like a cheesy answer that is absurd.
Okay.
So there's a song called Miracles Happen that is by Maya or however she says her name. The only reason I know the song is because it's like the theme song from Princess Diaries, which I don't care what that makes me look like. I don't care if you want to shut me off right now. Stay with me. I promise I'm deeper than Princess Diaries. I grew up in the 90s. Leave me alone.
It's a transcendent film, Maddie.
It is a transcendent film. And if you can't listen to that, feel hopeful, inspired, energized, whatever, then there's something wrong with your insides. So
correct.
I've had, as we'll dive into, a lot of these huge prayers, life-changing prayers that I really never knew what the answer was going to be to those. that answer has been yes for me in the last couple of years. And so in all reality, I really do feel like I've been a witness, like to just miracle after miracle that God has worked in my life. And also on a childlike level, it just brings me joy. So
that's,
you know what? That'll be my only answer. It's my only answer. Cut, take, moving on.
Okay. I love it.
Princess Diaries.
Love it. Okay. So my daughter is, oh, look, we got the reactions happening already.
Let's go.
So my daughter is 10 and she was having a sleepover sometime in the fall, like where a bunch of her little girlfriends were here and they're all in the living room and they're like, you know, making popcorn and they're doing their nails and all that stuff. And they were like, Mom, we want to watch a movie. What movie should we watch? And I was like, you should watch Princess Diaries. And they're like, what is that? And I made them watch Princess Diaries because I was like, look, this is a movie. I mean, I came out when I was in like late high school, I think. But I was like, you will love it. It is like a universal, girls love it. And some guys love it too. And she's now watched it probably like 20 times since then. So I was like, that's right. I'm influencing positively.
Yes, you are. I love it.
Okay. So now that we know your walkout song called Miracles Happen, give us the Maddie 101. So tell us who you are, what you do, and how you got to where you are today.
Okay. Maddie 101. I am from Nashville, born and raised here, still live here. I had a quick stint where I lived in Texas and California after college because why not? And I had no job or plans. But for all intents and purposes, Nashville's home and always has been. And in spite of my embarrassing walkout song, did grow up in a country music family. So that was a lot of just sort of my upbringing around music, of course, and that scene. But more than that, writing and songwriting, my dad is, if he never got to play a show in his whole life, he wouldn't care. He just wants to write and record songs. So I think that gene has always been in me. I, like you, love words. I love communication. I think there's so much power in them, even in the simplicity of them and in story. And so I say all that to say, I went to college at the University of Tennessee and studied creative writing, like had this seed of, I want to be a writer.
Did we talk about the fact that I was also a creative writing major?
In my initial lineup of here's why we're related.
I think
so. Beginning.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So that was always in my heart. And I remember Dad saying, you know, when I graduated, I think you do have a gift, or in his Southern, you know, he said, you got a gift, sugar, but you have to live your life. That's just what you're going to write about. And so for the first really decade after that, or 7 years or so, I felt like kind of wasting this gift, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. After school, I moved to Austin, Texas for no reason besides it was kind of like Nashville and not that far away. Got a job in a steakhouse for cash and ended up learning a lot about wine and falling in love with it. And so for the big portion of my 20s, I worked in the wine industry and like got my sommelier certification and worked with an importer and did restaurants and worked with a winery and kind of like did everything there. And honestly, it was a blast. And I still have a lot of great friends in that area. And I had a wine bar here in Nashville, whatever, and loved it. But I really felt this angst of like, I'm not, like, this isn't where God's taking me. And also sort of the discomfort of like, but also I have no idea how to get there. And so fast forward to 2018, I came to a point, I had had my restaurant, my wine bar here in Nashville a couple of years. It wasn't doing great financially, but also I was honestly just like very burnt out with it. It's extremely difficult. I was in a neighborhood that was kind of on the newer end of stuff, so it was hard. And so for a lot of reasons, I felt like, okay, this chapter needs to come to a close. I felt God be like, this is the time we're going to use those skills that I've honed in you, that are the seeds of desire I've planted in you. And so I kind of closed it, I mean, with nothing but a blank page ahead, knowing like, okay, I'm going to end up writing or doing something to help people, especially women. I had a lot of like college age girls that worked for me that I got to kind of mentor over that time frame. And so June of 2018, I closed that. And then September of 2018, I'm on vacation with my husband, Ben, who I had married like a year earlier, and my sisters and their then boyfriends. And we had gone down to several of them had birthdays. And so we went down to Florida where we grew up going. Dad's a big fisherman. So he had a fishing boat. We went out on the boat one afternoon, like dinner cruise, sunset cruise, went to this little tiki bar restaurant we grew up going to. They had a band, dancing, the whole thing. It was just such a beautiful day. And we go back to get on the boat to ride back to the hotel, and the steps to get back on the boat are slick. There had been a little thunderstorm. And my husband, Ben, came over to help some of us get back up, and his sandal hit the step and he slipped and just fell back and hit his head pretty hard on the concrete dock. And we, of course, rush over. I mean, it doesn't seem to be anything critical or emergent. It kind of is just like high school football game, you know, like he got hit a little hard. He shook off his head. He got up like he's probably got a concussion. We weren't too alarmed. And by God's grace, there were two off-duty EMTs there at the marina, and they came over and kind of checked him out. And they said, this could be more serious than it looks, like you should get him to a hospital. So from there, that began a 12-day stay in the neuro ICU in South Florida, multiple brain surgeries, medically induced coma. And on the 11th day, the neurosurgeon came to us and said, hey, like his intracranial pressure, which we've been tracking, is getting better. We're going to start pulling him off the medications. We're going to start waking him up. And so we thought, okay, finally, like the prayers are answered. He's going to be this miracle. Like, this is the time. Like, this is your moment, God. Like, here's what we've been waiting for. And they go do the MRI and they come back and she's like, I'm so sorry to tell you this, but he's had multiple strokes and he's brain dead. So at that point, you know, not even on our radar, to be honest. Like, my biggest fear was, he may not be the same man I married. Like, a lot of his injuries were in the portion of your brain that control your personality and your judgment and everything that goes along with that. So to then have that shock of, oh, not only is the frontal part of his brain damaged, but he's brain dead. And so that began, you know, my own, what is now almost 6-year battle with God of a million and one questions we can dive into. The first of which became when he did pass later that night, you know, which was 3 weeks before our first wedding anniversary. That first big thing was like, how do I trust you? Like, why did I trust you from the beginning when you could have spared him? You could have had him not fall. You could have healed his brain. You could have made him a miracle. And so the last years of my life dealing with all of that, I mean, the grief of it, the shock of it, the doubt that comes into a lifetime of faith when you've had no reason to doubt that faith. And so the last many years, in a twist, you know, that dream that I had of always using writing to help people, I always say, like, God had a nightmare and made a dream come true. Like, and I don't mean that to put a pretty bow on it. I'm just saying that what my dad told me was true. I lived my life and the worst thing I could have imagined happened. And through that, God not only has worked miracles in me through the grief and healing process, but he fulfilled this desire that he planted in my heart at 19. And so I released my memoir, Fall of 2021, which, word, I mean, you just heard a memoir. It feels weird to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's basically my journal for people who are going through hell themselves. That's what I wanted. I thought, like, my big prayer, my sort of indignant prayer from the start was like, God, I'm not doing this if it doesn't matter. Like, I'm not doing this if there's not purpose to it. And he honored that as indignant and entitled as that was, he honored it. So a lot of the last many years of my life have been working on that and working with groups of widows, especially young widows, just to honestly, like, break the isolation of it and try to speak hope into them. And redemption into them, and just that nothing is beyond redemption. I think that's what I hope people see in my life.
Man. Well, there's obviously so much there that is so powerful and that we're going to unpack together. And so for people that don't know, the book is called Lemons on Friday. And as soon as you and I, well, it's so funny. So can we just have actually a moment of honesty and confession here? Are you going to be okay with this? I did not tell you I was prepared you for this or whatever. So we met last week as the time of we're recording this. And like, when I saw that I was going to like be on your podcast, I was like, oh, this is so cool. And I like went and I was like, I think I follow her. And like, I don't, you know, sometimes you're like, I recognize that name. Like, I just wasn't paying attention. Okay. I'm in a weird brain space right now, Maddie. Okay. It's just, there's a lot happening. Okay. Everything. Okay. And so we're talking and like, you open up with that funny question. You're like, I grew up in country music. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Like I didn't know. And then after we got off, I was like, I'm going to go order your book. And so then I order your book immediately after we get off. And then I was like, oh, she's Alan Jackson's daughter? I had no idea. Which I realized that for some people, like, okay, that's not, but like, I don't think you understand. Like, I've taken my father to nine Alan Jackson concerts or something. Is my dad's favorite song of all time. So like, my dad and I have a special bond over Alan Jackson music in particular. And so it was just really funny to then like have no idea to like go off. And then, so this is me being really vulnerable and maybe embarrassing myself a little bit. So I hope this is okay.
Girl, for sure. I love that. And I will just share this insight with you that you can pass on to your dad since that's his favorite song. My middle sister, I have two younger sisters. Allie had her first child he's like 15 months at this point. And so it was my dad's first grandchild. And we all joked with him that his grandpa name should be Papa Top. So, yes! You know,
well,
Jack, he can't talk yet, so we don't know what it is. But Papa Top is in the running.
So my dad is Pop Pop. But like Papa Top is his favorite. And my dad is sober. He's been sober 45 years. But
even better.
Papa Top's his favorite song. Anyway, so, but I just love that I didn't know this about you until after we had got off of our call. And then I was like, well, I feel like an idiot. Like, I don't know why. I just, anyways, so this is me being really vulnerable and maybe embarrassing.
So glad.
But I bought your book immediately after that. And then, you know, and then you go down the rabbit hole of like internet stalking that we just all are like, let's just all admit that we do it about each other. It's fine. And I just, it further solidified again that I felt like we needed to be friends. But, you know, your story is so powerful. And I love how I just know how this, you know, in hearing the way that you shared it of having this mindset of being honest in what a grief process looks like, because whether we know it or not, or whether we want to admit it or not, like we're all going to go through these times in our lives where like the rug is just pulled out from under you. And so, you know, where you are just feeling like, why is this happening? Why is, you know, like my plans, everything's been taken from me, or like somebody suddenly dies, or, you know, you lose a job, or, you know, it's just, I mean, you know, a spouse cheats, or like, I mean, anything, like you could just name anything that is like traumatic. And, there are those times in our lives where we ask God why, or if we're not, not a believer and you're just mad at the cosmos or whatever it is. And that anger is something that I feel like we don't allow ourselves to sit in. And especially, I feel like I'm just going to be real, real frank here, is I feel like especially in the Christian faith community, we don't allow the emotion of anger to sit the way it probably needs to sometimes. Yeah. And so that's the first question I really wanted to ask you is like, how did you in that moment? Cause like you shared the, you know, you kind of went through this like journey of anger with God. Mm. What was it like to kind of sit initially in that feeling? And then how have you over time processed that anger to kind of get to, and not that you ever arrive on the other side of grief, but to process it to where you're in a different place with it?
Yeah, I appreciate what you said, frankly, about this community, this Christian community, and anger. That's definitely something I experienced when those feelings came up. Is like this, I've been a believer my whole life. Like this isn't how I'm supposed to feel toward God, right? Or like these aren't the feelings I'm supposed to bring in prayer, kind of thing. Like, if you've never said an angry prayer, it doesn't feel great the first time it comes out. And I think part of really crucial bit of my journey was getting from the sort of polished picture of what it means or what I thought it meant to be a believer, the everything happens for a reason kind of mindset, which, you know, I think we're not going to dive all into that, but it's well-meaning, right?
Yeah.
Like that kind of trite, well-meaning, and I do believe and know that every anything that happens, God uses for good reason.
Right.
But again, we're not going to dive into that. But all that to say, these platitudes that I think are meant to comfort us really keep us crippled from healing. And what I mean by that is one of the biggest things, and I think refrains throughout the book and through my life in these past years, is really just learning. I use the metaphor a lot of like our two hands. And I think for me, particularly in the church, in the South, as women, I kind of jokingly call like the triangle that sets you up for failure, right, is to be a Southern Christian woman, because you're expected to hold it together and be respectful and be courteous and be faithful and be strong. And those things are awesome. But when they keep you from living fully as the human with a full range of emotions that God created you to be, then you don't have the capacity to heal. Like, and I mean that as blunt as it sounds. Like, I am wired to be the push it down person or the stay busy to outrun it person. And I was good at it. This thing that was too big to push down and too life-changing to outrun happened. And I was just faced with the reality that, like, if you don't learn how to feel how awful this is, like, if you don't learn how to hurt, like, and let yourself hurt, honestly, then you're not going to let out all of this stuff that needs to be out in order to be restored, in order to heal, you know? And so, the biblical word is lament. And I don't think I'd ever really thought about that word, nor do we use it in regular conversation. But the idea of it is like hammered into us throughout scripture. It's not the pretty polished picture that I think we get from Christian culture. It's the opposite. Like, you read the Psalms, you look at David, shoot, look at Jesus. Like, he's angry, he's crying, like, he's broken, you know? And so I think it was the first time I ever even thought about, do we have an invitation from God to be angry with him? Do we have an invitation from God to be disappointed with him? And the answer, man, unequivocally through scripture is yes.
Yeah.
And you know that. But I didn't until, you know, my life was a mess. And so to answer your question and not go on another rant here, it felt wrong. I felt guilty to feel those things at first until I had kind, wise people point me back to the real God of the real Bible, who says over and over, you know, I am near to the brokenhearted. Like, I heal the contrite and lowly heart. Like, he gives us more examples almost of people who are hurting with him honestly than he does even rejoicing. And so that is a huge part of what I hope people learn from my book. And what I was very clear with my editors about is, like, I don't want this to read pretty. I want it to read hopeful because that's real. But I want it to read as hard as it was, because you inhibit yourself from God's real healing and the real joy and depth of life that comes on the other side of sorrow. If you try to sugarcoat it just doesn't work.
I'm going to take a quick break from my chat with Maddie to let you know that if you don't know already, my first book, If I Don't Laugh, I'll Cry, is out into the world. It released just a couple of weeks ago, and I can't thank you all enough for the support and the encouragement and your reviews and your feedback and for sharing it. Please keep sharing it. And if you have not already bought a copy, if you are listening to this episode when it airs, as of right now, this week, it is on sale on both Amazon and Target and Barnes & Noble. So you can grab a copy on sale. You can pick up a copy for your friends. I also have some book tour dates coming up in Chapel Hill, in Houston, Texas, in Austin, Texas. So if you are in the Houston area, I will be at Mercy House Global at their retail location on Tuesday, April 16th with my special guests, Kristen Welch and Maureen Kaderi. And then 2 weeks after that, I will be in Austin, Texas on Tuesday, April 30th with my special guest, Jessica Honegger. And we will be at Mission Church in Round Rock, Texas. I would love to see you there. I also have dates in Chapel Hill and Wake Forest. So please come out. I would just love to hug you, to sign a copy of a book, to chat. It's just so fun when I get to meet readers and podcast listeners out in the world. So if you can make it to one of those dates, that would be amazing. And like I always say, thank you, thank you, thank you for supporting me, for supporting this podcast, for supporting the book. It means so much. All right, now back to my chat with Maddie Jackson Smith. I love that you mentioned too, like the examples that we see in scripture of what it looks like to lament and to cry out. And we've just, and again, I say this in like a, the general, like hasty generalization of like a sweeping statement, like we as the capital C church has just, I feel like we've just done a poor job of creating space for that. And it's something that, that, you know, in my grieving pre my BC life, my before Christ life, grieving in my, you know, current walk with God, and then walking with friends through times of grief is making sure that I'm coming at it from a place of like really understanding. And I think I'm paraphrasing a way that you said it, but you said something to the effect of like, just the range of emotions that we feel. And like, that is such a key piece of this, is understanding and really accepting and acknowledging that like God created us with all of these emotions for a reason. Now, there is a way to feel those emotions that is healthy. And then there are ways to feel those emotions that is unhealthy. And yep. I tell you, like, as you were talking, I actually like grabbed my Bible because I was thinking about this. I learned, like, to your point of that whole, just like crying out to God, just like putting it all out there, leaving nothing left on the table. And I immediately thought about Lamentations and Lamentations chapter 3. And I actually, we studied this in my Bible study last year, and I had never, like, cause we know the verse that we hear, you know, like your mercies are new every morning, like great is your faithfulness. That's like a really pretty verse, but no one ever talks about what comes right before it. Right. And so I'm pulling out, I pulled my Bible out. So this is actually the Message translation. But in the middle of chapter 3, like right there in the middle, like prior to all of this, like he's literally like, I'm the man who has seen trouble coming from the lash of God's anger. He ground my face into the gravel. He pounded me into the mud. I gave up on life altogether. I've forgotten what the good life is like. I said to myself, this is it. I'm finished. God is a lost cause. Like all of this is what he's saying in chapter 3. I'll never forget the trouble, the utter lostness, the taste of ashes, the poison I've swallowed. I remember it all. Oh, how well I remember the feeling of hitting the bottom. But there's one thing I keep remembering. I keep a grip on hope. And so it's like up until this point, and he is just like, everything is terrible. God has ground my face into the gravel. Like everything is awful. He shot me in the stomach. Like, I mean, this is like brutal language, Jeremiah. But then he's like, but the one thing I remember, I keep a grip on hope. God's loyal love couldn't have run out. His merciful love couldn't have dried up. They're created new every morning. How great your faithfulness. I'm sticking with God. I say it over and over. He's all I got left. And I tell you, when you read those verses in the context of like prior to that, him being like, I have nothing left. And I'm telling you that for people that have grieved, are grieving, will grieve, there will always be a point in the grief journey where you just feel like that's it. I've got nothing left. I've got nothing left. And getting to that point, but then clinging on to this like invisible string of hope. My gosh, it's so powerful. So I guess anyway, I didn't really even have a follow-up question to that, but just as you were talking, it's like the first thing that came to mind is that moment of realization of when you cling to hope. And so then after anger, you get to that point of trust, but it's still a process. And so what has that been for you? Because that I think from what I understand and beginning to dive even deeper into your story and what you're sharing, did that process really come for you as you began to write?
That was certainly a part of it. I mean, like I said, I've always been a writer and loved the power of words. And so for me, it was the natural outlet to process feelings and a circumstance that I had never imagined facing. Mm-hmm. So for me, it started there. And I think I'm also a pretty analytical person. And so I think what what the writing and journaling helped do for me personally was continue to point me back to logic. And when I say logic, I mean like truth, like capital T truth.
Right.
And that is obviously scripture, and that's God's word. And so I think for me, somehow it was a safe place to ask all these questions and to really not be afraid of what the answer was. And I know now, and I think can hopefully offer a little assurance to people who are in a place of really needing to ask these questions, is that if you do it sincerely with the Lord and you do it sincerely with people who are wise in their faith that can help you, like, you shouldn't be afraid of what the answers are going to be. Like, it's hard, and they aren't going to be the pretty polished answer. Like, they're going to have the beginning part of Lamentations in the answer.
Right.
But that finality of hope is always there too. And so I think, yeah, journaling was part of it. If you're like a verbal processor, you know, having that safe person to just word vomit where they're not going to, you know, hold you accountable in permanent ink for the stuff that you say. Like, counseling was a huge part of that for me. Mm-hmm. Obviously, something that tragic, I needed professional counsel in. And so I think part of working through the anger, it just starts with letting yourself feel it, like we talked about. And then for me, it was, okay, this feeling is real and very legitimate. And if the truth or the logic is that I keep seeing over and over in the word is that God not only can handle it, but invites me to bring it to him,
that part,
then there isn't any safer place. And he does. And like, for me, I will just double down and say, as a person who has struggled a lot with shame just because of the way that I'm wired, and people's perceptions of me being a big part of why I've always done what I've done or not done what I've done, I realized in the grief that keeps us from God is like applying that shame mentality to him like we do other people. And it doesn't exist. Like, that was the big thing for me. I remember finding the verse in 2 Corinthians where it says that he who knew no sin, Jesus, became our sin so we would become the righteousness of God. And that was huge for me because it was a reminder that, like, yeah, he doesn't just roll his eyes and like forgive me over and over again, but then still kind of like keep me at arm's length. Like, when he looks at me, I've become the righteousness of God. Like, none of my pain or hurt or disappointment can change that. And also, like, joy as my father to put those angsty feelings to rest. Like, it's unreal.
Yeah.
I don't even remember the question you asked me. I just, that is something that I'm so passionate about people hearing. Like, you're already clean. You can bring your dirt to him. He like wants you to, asks you to.
Well, the way you said it, like about the, it's not just that God can handle, and this is, I had never really thought about it until you just said it. It's not just that God can handle all of our emotions and our range of emotions and our anger and our questions and all of it. It's that he invites us into it. And, and the questions are okay. And I remember, and funny enough, my kids and I, my husband and I, we're rewatching season 3 of The Chosen right now. We're big fans of The Chosen.
Love it.
Love The Chosen. It's so good. And so we're rewatching season 3 right now. And, there's a scene in episode 6 that is actually, you know, cause a lot of The Chosen is creative license. It's not straight out of the Bible, which, you know, it's fine. But there's a scene that is like pretty much straight out of the Bible where disciples of John the Baptist come to Jesus and they're like, we've got questions from John the Baptist for you, Jesus. And Jesus, and like, there's Pharisees around, there's people around, and this is right out of the Bible. I think this is like somewhere in Matthew. And basically like their whole thing is like, well, we've got these questions and like, we don't want to ask these questions in front of all these people. Cause it's like kind of it's going to put you on the spot, Jesus. And he's like, no, actually now's a great time to ask those questions. And so like Jesus, he just says in that moment, he's like, no, you can ask the question in front of all these people. Mm-hmm. And so they're kind of like, John the Baptist disciples are all kind of like, what? And so he's like, no, go ahead and ask. And so they go, well, John the Baptist, your cousin, like he wants to know, are you actually the one that is to come? Like, are you actually the Messiah, or are we supposed to like look for somebody else? And then Jesus says, and like, again, this is kind of, this is straight out of scripture where he just kind of says, my cousin, the one who prepared the way for me, the one that was prophesied about Malachi, like he prepared the way for me. He was the one, there's no one greater than him, but also the least of these is greater than John. And even he has questions about if I'm the Messiah or not. And it's this sweet moment of like, he is literally in that moment inviting them into asking a hard question. He's not afraid of the question. And he's like, that is a great question. That is a valid question that you are asking. And I'm not going to answer it in the way that you want me to, but I'm going to invite you into the conversation. And I think it's actually a beautiful picture of like, it's John the freaking Baptist. Okay. Am I allowed to say that? It's John the Baptist. Like, and he, even he is like, can I trust you? Can I trust who you are?
Are we sure?
Are we sure? And that it's like that freedom that then Jesus even invites us into the moment of like, go ahead, ask the question. Like, I'm not afraid of it. I'm not afraid of it. Like my Messiahhood does not hinge on whether or not you ask this question.
Yeah.
And so that is like, it's such a sweet lesson for us to just to feel the feelings and know that God invites us into the conversation. Oh man, this is so good. All right. Well, I want to, you know, obviously we've talked a lot about your grief journey, which is just, you know, again, it is a heartbreaking, heart-wrenching story. And I'm so sorry that you experienced that. I mean, just, just the way that you describe it and just, I mean, it's a nightmare. You know, you lived a nightmare and it's terrible. But you know, the way that you've talked about it, the way that you've written about it is so beautiful and so redemptive, which is really, it's so hard. But like you said, you know, there's a, you're in a place now where you're living out a lot of the answered prayers. So I'd love for you to kind of bring us to today. Like, where are you now? And how has God answered a lot of those prayers in a way that were unexpected?
Yeah, well, the sort of ending miracles happen part of that is, you know, a big thing that I address in the book that was probably one of the biggest, I call them, you know, a lot of things in the book. I call them paper cuts, the things that constantly pop up that just continue to prolong your grief. I call them the big question marks, just like everything about your future that's gone that you have to have little funerals for, I call it in the book too. Like all these ideas of basically the ripple effects and the secondary losses that come with especially a death like that. For me, some of the biggest secondary losses and questions and things that I had to grieve and really fight with the Lord on, is this going to happen for me? Is, you know, am I going to be able to be married again? Am I going to ever have the chance to be a mom? Or like, was this 1 year all I get? And, you know, everyone has those big capital questions, those big question marks that they're asking of God or waiting on from God or working, wrestling through with him. Those were the big ones for me, I think, because of our age and because of how little time we had before he passed away. And so, you know, the happy ending version is I met my new husband, Connor, 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and we were remarried last May and are expecting a baby in June. So those things are just an unequivocal yes from the Lord, which is amazing. So that's it. And I meant what I said. It feels like I've said this before to people, like it feels to me almost like I've been a witness to some story in a way that like I'm a spectator, you know, looking in. And that just, I think, speaks volumes to who God is and how he's creative and how he honors our trust in him. And I want to say all this with a huge caveat of redemption is not a replacement. Like,
yes,
because what you've lost and what you're going through, you know, is not probably replaceable. No. And for all intents and purposes, even though I am remarried, Ben is not replaceable. Like,
no,
they're that part of my life and his family and our dreams, and our plans are still things that I had to lay down, you know, with him in a really painful, really ongoing way. And there are still parts of things that we experienced together, we struggled in together to work to not bring into this marriage. Yeah. So it's just, it's not some, you know, it's not some like poof magic, rub the genie, here's the replacement, but it is redemption. And that's who God is. But I say that with the caveat of, it's not always going to look so one-to-one the way that he works in your life. And I'm beyond and daily floored in gratitude that mine does look pretty one-to-one in those two scenarios. And it's awesome. And I'm not going to like mitigate how amazing it is. But I also want to say, like, the first big redemption was simply me. Like, I got to a point, I don't remember exactly when, but I remember speaking these words to people before I ever started dating again, several years after Ben's death, and saying, like, I will not stop fighting with the Lord prayer for these things that I really want. Because again, scripture invites, he invites me to in scripture. You know, you do not have because you do not ask. Like, knock and the door will be opened. Again, that's not a fast pass to get the answer, yes. But he tells us, bring it all to me. And I was at a point where I said, I will not stop fighting for this with him. But if the answer is no, what he has done is brought me to a point where I am grateful for the marriage we had, and I am grateful for whatever is ahead. And I really honestly feel secure with God and my people, then like, I'll be okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I, you know, and I still want it. I will fight for it. And I believe that we should. And I believe that we grow closer to him in that fight. But I had to get to a point where I really meant, God, this is what I will, but you know, it's the Gethsemane prayer, but what you will, like, here, I want this stuff your way and your will and your timing, because I just know it's what's best. And so I hope people hear that, like, that's the big redemption that happened. And without that, being able to be a wife again and being able to be a mom, like, all of that stuff even still isn't stable ground. And I know that because I learned it the really freaking hard way.
Yeah.
So I just don't want people to see the pretty bow at the end and be like, oh, well, I didn't get, you know, I'm never going to get that. And that's just, we don't know. We don't know. But I'm, the way that God has restored these elements of my life is unbelievable. And I feel floored and grateful and like a witness to it. And just more than anything, man, it's just made me so present and like, just savor everything. Mm. Like that is one of the treasures when you have to go through something like this. Cause as you said, we all will to our own varying degrees. There's treasure in it. If you look for it, right. There's treasure of gratitude and joy and slowness and presence and savoring what you have, because you know that it could be temporary. And so
yeah, that's right.
So those are a million little miracles, right? But yes, Connor is the greatest joy. Mm-hmm. He is the kindest man. When you talk about just sort of John in our interview on my show, I was just thinking, like, how do we get these men with these soft hearts, yeah. right? Like, it's just amazing. And that's who he is, in the way that he's not just accepted this really tough part of my story, but like championed it mm-hmm. from day one. We started dating like, oh my gosh, Molly, we started dating like a month before my book came out. So like, we're not boyfriend girlfriend technically yet, and I'm like on a book tour promoting my grief and my marriage to Ben, and this is the guy who's like going to Barnes and Noble to buy copies to take to his colleagues at work. Like, that's an incredible work of God. And so yeah, I could go on and on about him. And then of course we're having a baby in June, which is just unbelievable and amazing.
So excited for you. I mean, congratulations on all of those things. But I love so deeply how you frame it in such a way of like, yes, this is a story of redemption. This is a miracle, but it's not a pretty bow and it's not a replacement. I mean, I can relate to that in so many ways, that there is redemption through these things, but not replacement. And I think too, and I hope that this is, and if I ask any question here, that's like you know, you're like, no, I'm not answering that. You just tell me, we'll edit this out. But I think, you know, so I've had some people in my life in the last few years who have tragically lost spouses. And it's like way, like terrifyingly, like way more common than like people I think talk about is like losing a spouse at a young age. And so actually, side note, do you follow Vids for Wids?
No.
Okay. Well, you need to.
I haven't heard of that.
So it's called, it's at Vids, V-I-D-S for like F-O-R-W-I-D-S. And it was started by a young widow and it's like videos for widows. And it's basically like a support group online for young widows. It's, but she's also like, has a great sense of humor. You need to have her on your podcast, the girl who started Vids for Wits. And
awesome.
I don't know her. So like, I'm just saying this as like somebody who like, I don't know her. She doesn't know me. But I just, I follow her because I have some people in my life who are young widows. And I like, part of it is like, I want to help. Like, how do I learn to be a friend and support somebody who is a young widow or widower? You know, I have a guy I went to college with who like lost his wife, you know, really young. So, you know, it's just, it's an unfathomable thing. And it's so hard. And, but overwhelmingly, like one of the conversations that gets had is like when the dust somewhat settles, like it never fully settles, but when the dust somewhat settles and you get to that point of like, maybe you're open to opening your heart up again. There are so much like nuance and messiness and things that goes into that. It's like, not just like you asking your own question of like, can I get married again? Like not just logistically, but like, am I going to like love this person the way I loved my first husband? Like, am I going to, I love that like, you were honest about like, I'm bringing things in that we struggled with in our marriage that I have to like, make sure that this is a different marriage. Like that is a, that's a lot. And so those are the honest pieces of this that like, I feel like don't get talked about enough. And so I would just be curious. I set all that up to ask you, like, as you were navigating this journey early on, what was it about Connor specifically in your relationship? Like, what were some of those early conversations where he, you know, whether you gave him space to like ask hard questions or he gave you space to like understand that he's not competing with Ben? Does that make sense? Because that is a thing that I've heard where like then the new person comes in and like is like, well, am I competing with this person? That's hard. So anyway, that's kind of a nuanced question, but I'm curious.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you addressing that. And it is just such a weird and unique situation. So I just want to say that for anyone who is in it, it's just uncomfortable for every party. And I think the biggest thing for me was, well, number one, I prayed very specifically that whoever the Lord had for me, if he did, would just have some way to sort of know my story to begin with. Because when I started to date, the hardest thing, I think kind of what you would expect is like, how do I share this part? When do I share this part? Like, it feels like there is only a gigantic elephant in the room and you have no idea how to cover that territory. And to be totally honest with you, I did it a lot of different ways that all sucked. I did the like hold off, just like let's pretend that I'm a quote unquote normal woman, like trying to date. But then it felt very much like I was insincere and like not disclosing parts of my life or like editing Ben out of stories because I didn't want to have that conversation, which felt terrible. And then I swung the total opposite end of the spectrum, which was like rip the Band-Aid off, which also does not work on like a first or second date where you're not even having dinner. It's like, you think if you just throw the elephant, it'll be over, but no, he just plops right in the middle of the table and it's horrible. So that's not helpful, but I hope it helps people not feel alone. But I am thankful to say Connor was somebody that I acquaintances before. So he did know of my story. So there was, I was able to remove that initial shock factor.
Yeah.
But even so, someone is aware, you know, it still is, when do you breach that topic?
Yeah.
Like, do you, in the normal course of a date conversation when you're telling stories about your life, do you edit them out or do you keep them in it, and can they handle it? And all those questions you referenced. And so all I know to say is to be a lot more honest and straightforward than you want to, or than I wanted to. I think inclination is to, as we talked about, sort of keep things surface level or clean because they don't feel as hard. And with something of this magnitude, that actually makes it harder. Like the question marks and sort of the vagueness actually, I think, create more tension. And so I appreciate you ask what about Connor allowed me to do that, because you have to, it has to be a person who is safe, who is secure, who can handle the honesty. And he has that. Like he would ask me questions about Ben or about our marriage or about trips we had taken or whatever early in our dating. Felt like permission for me to then be more honest. And it was just sort of like a trial and error and a one toe into the water at a time. But I think there was a sense with him that was really safe immediately and that was really secure immediately. And that made me feel more comfortable to not hide things or edit things or downplay things. But it definitely has to be a bite size, you know, because it's not to anyone's benefit to just throw the elephant as a whole onto the table. And so,
yeah,
I don't know that that's really a helpful, concise thing, but it's, I would say, you know, if there is a person who has the character that you can sense wants to hear it honestly, like not even can handle it, because like nobody really knows how to handle it.
Right.
But there's just so much honesty that's necessary and grace that's required, and just vocalizing stuff that you wouldn't think needs to be vocalized. Like you talked about competing or comparing. And I think I used that word not right off the bat, but early enough when I knew like, okay, this could be a real thing. I just said, as awkward as it was, like, my biggest fear is you feeling like I'm comparing you to him. And my biggest fear is you feeling like you're competing with him. And I will do everything in my effort to not do that. But if I do, it's okay to point that out kindly. It, like, I want you to kind of hold me accountable to how I'm speaking about him and how you feel about it. It's like therapy 101. Like, you have to gently be honest and be humble enough to hear the feedback. And it's really awkward and hard. Yeah. But
yeah. Well, yeah. And I'm curious, like, how much has in your own journey, like going through counseling and going through this with a counselor, like how much has that played into your, I don't know if toolbox is the thing I'm looking for, but just like in how to have those conversations, like how much has that played into it? And how much has it just been like, this just feels right. This feel like I've had time to process it and work it out with the Lord. Like here's where I am. I'm curious what the answer for that is.
Yeah, it's both. And I think, you know, counseling, that's sort of the goal, I think, after doing it for many years. It's not to fix all your problems. It's to give you the toolbox to deal with your problems, you know? And so I think it, as someone who had never been a huge feeler or deep conversation.
I love your honesty. Or,
you know, I needed those tools. Like I hadn't really had self-exposing, vulnerable conversations with men. And so it helped me in that way. But it is like life. It's just kind of like one foot in front of the other, and learning the whole way that I have learned to converse with Connor since is different than the way that I had learned to converse with Ben, because they're different people. And for all intents and purposes, I'm a lot of a different person. And so
totally,
you know, we've hit it out of the park and we've crashed and burned. And again, that like grace and honesty, once you know a person is safe, is the only way that I know to direct you. And you get the grace from the Lord, right? And you get that sense of assurance that this is safe from the Holy Spirit. And so it's certainly both. I mean, it is, if your leg is broken, go to the doctor because they know how to do surgery and fix it. But also stick close to the Lord in your recovery because he will guide you. And so it's definitely both.
Mm. I would love to know, this is a personal question. What does it look like for you and Connor? And then especially like now as you bring a child into the world, which is just like, I could just sit here and tear up with both like happy and sad tears, like thinking about that even for you as like little time as I have known you. It's just like the beauty and the brutality of it, like the reality of it. But I would like to know, like, what does it look like for you and Connor? And then you as a family with child to honor and remember Ben, like what kinds of things do you guys do together that help you in your own journey, but then also help invite Connor and then your future child, like into a conversation around honoring Ben?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that we have landed on in these conversations, especially with having a child and this loss and this grief being the foundation of now what I do and hopefully will always be a part of my story in the ways that it is very public. Just that we kind of, like I said, like take it honestly, and kind of to circle back to the beginning of our conversation and my comment about the two hands is like when that moment happens or when those moments happen with our son or with our other kids down the road or whatever, you know, I don't want to hide it. I don't want to brush it under the rug. It is a proud part of my life. It is a part of the way that God has given me purpose to love other people. And so I think to be able to have that conversation whenever that time is to use the two hands kind of example to them and to say like, you know, this is a really hard thing that happened. This is a part of, you know, mom's life that has and will continue to impact a lot of what she does and how God lets her help people. And also, no matter what hard things happen, like, he is a good God that brings good things and brings love and brings, you know, redemption is too big of a word for a child, but whatever the child version of that is. And, you know, Connor's just done such a great job of holding that with me from the beginning that I think we just figure out, you know, in an age appropriate way, what loss and hope or what hard and hopeful look like. Right. I mean, that's all I know. Let you know when I get there, I guess.
Oh man. Well, wow. This is, oh my gosh, Maddie, I really say this with all honesty and sincerity. Like I just adore you. And I just think, so much that what you bring into the world and how you are stewarding, tragedy in a really beautiful way, is a gift. And I'm not like saying that with like, it's not platitudes. It's not like Christianese. Like I really mean it in that, like you would have every excuse and people would understand for you to just like hole up in your house and just be like, that's it. I'm done. Like I'm just, and you just, you're the grace and the fight I see within you, is really beautiful. And so you are impacting a lot. You're inspiring and impacting me. And so thank you for the work that you're doing. So as we wrap up here, I would love for you to just share, you know, about the book and the podcast and where can people follow you and also be your friend and all of those things. And just how can people support you and, you know, how just be in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you saying all that. It feels, you asked kind of the legacy question. I think, how will we carry Ben's legacy? And, you know, almost 6 years later, continuing to have these conversations and really hear people continue to validate that initial indignant prayer, like the purpose keeps showing and showing and showing. Yeah. And for his legacy to continue on like this is unbelievable. Yeah. To be a part of, to be honest. So I'm thankful for you saying that. And if people want to be a part of this, all of this crazy mess, and actually because of who you are in your podcast, Can I Laugh on Your Shoulder? I feel like I should give an asterisk with, I think you could, you know, endorse at this point. I'm actually really fun.
You
like,
are so
my
fun.
My story's really hard, but I'm a really fun.
You're so fun.
To have in life or otherwise. So it's not all gloom and doom on my page.
I feel like that's very clear, by the way, is like you are very fun. Great. And I don't have people on here who are not fun.
That's true. Yes, I know that you are the litmus test for that. But anyway, I am simply Maddie Jackson on Instagram and Facebook and those things. And it's a little work and a little personal and a little tough and a little fun. So yeah. That's me. And then you mentioned, obviously, Limbs on Friday. We've talked about, you can find everywhere books are sold, a little teaser, which I've not even mentioned. And to be quite honest, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to. I have a daily devotional kind of follow-up to Lemons being released this fall. Fairly certain, that's all I can say about it.
Okay.
But for anybody who is in this season and feels like, okay, I just really need, you mentioned, I love the verse from Lamentations, the mercies are new every morning. That was sort of the impetus for the new devotion, because
look at that. I didn't even know that.
Bite-sized proof. I know you teed it up perfectly.
Ooh,
so
God thing.
Keep eyes out for that. And then my podcast as well is called Enjoy Life, INJOY, because after everything I've been through, what I hope people see from my life is you do have agency to choose joy, even in the worst of the worst of it. And so that's what we talk about. That's what we talked about together. And okay. I get to have amazing guests, and you get to learn a little bit about me on occasion. And so, yeah, that's where I'm at. That's what
so
I do.
Good.
And I just love to hear people's stories. So please reach out, DM anytime.
Oh, I love it so much. Well, here's a little fun thing that you can go on like Amazon and look up Maddie's author profile, and you can like follow her. And then when the devotional gets like announced and is out, yes, you can order it. You can like pre-order it. So I always do that with authors I love, is I follow their author profile so that when their new books get announced, then you get like a little email that's like new from this person. So that's
for sure.
a little pro tip there. Although funny enough, this is a complete digression. I did that for Tony Evans, because I have a couple, and then I feel like that dude releases a new book of some kind every week. So I was like, I gotta unfollow him because he's releasing.
Yeah, unsubscribe.
Unsubscribe, Tony Evans. Like, how do you do that?
Sorry.
How do you do that, Tony
Sorry,
Evans?
Man.
He's the man. Maddie, this has been an honor and a joy and a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for your time and just kindness and sharing my story. I think, again, like I said, it's being almost 6 years out and continuing to have opportunities to see that prayer answered.
Yeah.
For purpose and legacy is so incredible. So I'm thankful.
Amen. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I hope you loved it. I would love to know what you learned, or if there was something that inspired you or encouraged you, please let us know on social media. You can find me at Still Being Molly or at Can I Laugh Pod on the socials. And would you take a moment to head on over and subscribe and leave a review and all of those things? It really does help us to know what you're liking and how the show's impacting you. Thank you for your support. And thank you for listening. And of course, as always, thank you to the team at Third Wheel Media for producing the show. And for you, I hope something this week makes you laugh till you cry. We'll see you next week. Bye.